يا ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 4. We'll cover texts 16 through 18. Something that's going to be coming up in future sections is Vidura is going to be told by Uddhava, rather than asking your questions of me, you should present your questions to Maitreya. And the cultural reason why is that Maitreya is my elder. Because he's my elder, in the presence of an elder, one should not instruct, one should defer to the elder. Cultural point. Although, the part that we're reading now indicates that Krishna is focused on Uddhava. Maitreya comes in, and Maitreya is being spoken to indirectly through Krishna speaking to Uddhava. As far as Krishna is concerned, Uddhava is vastly more intimate of a devotee and eligible for going back to Godhead. And Maitreya is somewhere, you know, not there yet. So, what's the lesson for us practically? One of the lessons is, in all circumstances in our dealings with devotees, respect is appropriate. We'll say the opposite. Disrespect is never appropriate. Respect is always appropriate. And how to exhibit or display respect, there are standards, etiquette standards. And with those that are elder, they are worthy of respect, just due to the fact that they're elder. Prabhupada once detailed that there are five standards for seniority. Kind of we added one of them. The one that we added was who joined the Hare Krishna movement first. Or, you know, who got initiated first or something like that. But someone whose realization is superior. A nice example is Prahlad Maharaj. He was, by age, he was a small boy, 6 years old. But the demigods were pushing him forward as the superior one, not by age, but by realization. So, that's one standard, realization. Then another is age. Someone who's, let's say, in our Hare Krishna movement, someone who's a Prabhupada disciple. And then those that are disciples of Prabhupada disciples, respect naturally goes to those who are senior in that sense. Or, in a broader sense, simply senior by age, as already mentioned. Ashram considerations and varna considerations. Respect goes to those who are qualified brahmanas, and respect goes to those who are in the renounced order of life. It's just, it's a cultural thing. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu utilized or deployed that cultural consideration when those that, his students that were criticizing him because of their intimate contact with him and not understanding his position, as a householder teacher, he decided he would take sannyas because they would then offer respect and they would benefit as opposed to receive reactions for disrespect. So, put over here on one side, there's respect. On the other side, there's what's important to Krishna. Now, that we respect one another is important to Krishna, but even more is the spiritual principle. That is, those who are very dear to Krishna because of their loving disposition towards him. And that's, so he, Krishna is equal to all, but we can, you know, Prabhupada said he's especially equal to those who are very affectionate towards him, his dear devotees. He reciprocates with their affection for him. So, both have to be taken into consideration, and it's sometimes a delicate matter to take these things into consideration. But the spiritual principle prevails. While the spiritual principle prevails, we don't ignore standards of etiquette. At the same time, spiritual principles prevail. Here's a common one for at least, you know, young Indian persons come to America to do their studies or get their career going or something, and then they meet the Hare Krishna movement. And then they start to make spiritual progress, and then their parents don't know what's going on. And, you know, what to do about my parents and my expectations my parents have for me about all kinds of things. And they don't know what's going on. Maybe about my marriage, or maybe about my life, or maybe about this, or about that, and my habits, and so many things. So then it puts that nice new devotee in a dilemma. I want to respect my parents, but, you know, it may compromise my Krishna conscious practices. What to do? And it's, so it's one of those things where both need to be done, respecting of parents, but the superior consideration, that something that trumps the religious consideration, is the spiritual consideration. One's Krishna conscious principles and practices and the spiritual connection shouldn't be compromised, while at the same time continuing to demonstrate respect that's due and that one wants to. So the happy solution is many parents become devotees. But that in-between phase is it's very common, and it's challenging for the person because they're, you know, they're conflicted. When the spiritual principle rules, the material principle follows these generally. So here is, it's very interesting in that sense that Maitreya is the superior to Uddhava. He's very elderly, He's a Brahmana. Uddhava is engaged in as a minister in the government in Dwarka. So by ashram, by varna, he's superior. By age, he's superior. By his spiritual master, Parashramuni, is elder, and so forth. So he's the superior. But he's, as far as Krishna's exhibition of etiquette, he's placing Uddhava foremost because of their intimate relation. And by doing so, the instructions that he's giving to Uddhava are elevating to Maitreya. He's a devotee, Maitreya, but he's the mixed devotee, and he's being elevated to the platform that Uddhava is on by the dialogue that he's hearing. Immediately it's happening by this, what we were discussing yesterday and a little bit before, the importance of desiring the association of the Supreme Lord. Because if that's not there, but one is a very elevated, learned person, what's the goal, or what's the attainment that one is likely to rise to, or some sense of liberation that may be not so strong in, let's say, with a strong impetus for self-interest. I want liberation because I don't want this material condition. I want out of the material conditions. It's like selfish. And another nice point is that as this exchange is going on, Krishna's having this very personal, very intimate dealing with Uddhava, but he then discloses the fact, explicitly and directly, that I'm not just your friend. He indicates that he's the personality of Godhead. Like Krishna does with Arjuna. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate. And after hearing that, the Chaturshloki verses of Bhagavad Gita in the 10th chapter, what is Arjuna's response? Param brahmam, param davam, parvitram, paramam bhavan. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, not exactly the same, but very, very similar. There's this intimate exchange, and then Krishna discloses, I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is I who spoke to my son, Lord Brahma, Vedic knowledge, and imparted to him the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam in these four essential verses. And that's me, you know, that's me. So, how does Uddhava process that? He begins to weep. And express that, you know, you're offering me liberation, but I don't want these things. I just want your association. I want your service. Iti matva vajante mam. By understanding Krishna's position in truth, what follows very naturally is it strengthens the desire to serve him. And exclusively, just to serve him. Therefore, the connection between the disclosures that Krishna makes about himself, here specifically to Uddhava, or in general how Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam are very clearly delineating Krishna's position, his glories, his activities, his loving exchanges, his qualities. A natural outcome will be, if we're hearing carefully, desire to serve him. There are impetuses, as I was sharing the other day, impetus for ecstatic love. Not just do because you're supposed to do. And if you don't do what you're supposed to do, you know what happens? Poof! You get smacked. So you don't want the smack. You want to do what you're supposed to do. Be nice. Because you get punished if you don't. So that kind of, fear, serve God or else, then it's not very inspiring. If persons are very troubled or very ignorant, maybe that will help them sit straight and be nice. But that's not very enduring. It's not very endearing either. But the Bhagavatam is very much like that. It's very attractive. The beautiful Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam. It's attracting our natural devotion unto Krishna as we hear and hear and hear carefully. So, continuing, just after Uddhava says to Krishna, I only want your association, these dharma, artha, kama, moksha, they're easily obtained for one who becomes your devotee. You give them so liberally, just as you're giving me the topmost of them, liberation, but I have no attraction for them, I have no desire for them. I do desire your association in loving service. Now this next verse, he's speaking to the Lord, according to Acharyas, primarily for the benefit of Maitreya. Interesting. You're in this honored by Krishna or recognized by Krishna position, but you're in the presence of someone who is vastly, by culture, your senior in many ways. Now, how do you be a servant to that person who is your senior? He's doing it very expertly. He's directly glorifying the personality of Godhead, where Maitreya can hear. Because the person who is a jnani or has disposition towards jnana, even a devotee that has disposition towards jnana, cannot reconcile the apparent contradictions of the Lord. The apparent contradictions such as, he's the supreme, he is the source of everything, but he acts as if he's one of us. And we know we're accustomed to thinking of people who are like us, and we're not accustomed to thinking of people who are transcendental. For the devotee, it's ecstatic to see the Lord behave like one of us, knowing that he's fully transcendental. So what Uddhava's doing is simultaneously, he's appreciating that which is difficult to discern about the Lord, and he's directly glorifying the Lord in that way. He's also assisting Maitreya, which means he's assisting us, where we're devotees or trying to be devotees, but our training, like our conditioning, is jnana. Try to, figure it out. Use our smarts and figure it out. That's how we've been pumped up for years and years and years through our whole training in school and academics and so on. You know, like, you know, figure it out, get it together, you can do it. So he's putting the brakes on that one, saying you can't. But it's through another process, through disclosure. Here's what text 16 is translated by Srila Prabhupada. My Lord, Uddhava addressing Krishna, even the learned sages, we're not mentioning Maitreya by name, he just happens to be here, even the learned sages become disturbed in their intelligence when they see your greatness engages in fruitive work. Although you are free from all desires, that you take birth, although you are unborn, that you flee out of fear of the enemy and take shelter in a fort, although you are the controller of invincible time. Now, time is the destroyer of all things. He who is the controller of the destroyer of all things runs in fear, hides in a fort. And that you enjoy householder life surrounded by many women, although you enjoy in yourself. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Very interesting purport. Pure devotees of the Lord are not very much concerned with philosophical speculation in regard to transcendental knowledge of the Lord. Nor is it possible to acquire complete knowledge of the Lord. Whatever little knowledge they have about the Lord is sufficient for them, because devotees are simply satisfied in hearing and chanting about the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. It's not an intellectual buzz for them. They're satisfied hearing the Lord's glories. This gives them all transcendental bliss. But some of the pastimes of the Lord appear contradictory, even to such pure devotees, and thus Uddhava asked the Lord about some of the contradictory incidents in his pastimes. The Lord is described as having nothing to do personally. And it is actually so because even in the creation and sustenance of the material world, the Lord has nothing to do. It seems contradictory then to hear that the Lord personally lifts the Govardhan Hill for the protection of his unalloyed devotees. He who has nothing to do is lifting Govardhan Hill to protect his devotees. That's a contradiction. The Lord is the Supreme Brahman, the Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, appearing like a man. But Uddhava has doubts whether he could have so many transcendental activities. Well, another version is that he wishes to expand those glories before Maitreya. In what Prabhupada has done is paraphrased a far more technical purport by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He's explaining karma activity, the karmani anihasya bhavo bhavasyate. So activities generally, the connotation of activities is involvement with matter with fruitive intention. That's karma. It may be, and then prescribed by the codes of the Vedas is properly done activity. So he explains, the personality of Godhead has nothing to do with the material energy. The affairs of the material energy, such as creation, are done indirectly through his potencies. He does not contact matter. So for him, there's no activity in the ordinary sense of activity and contact with matter. And he then says, so when the Upanishads speak of he does nothing at all, that's the sense. He doesn't have material activity. But then with his own swarup, he lives Govardhan Hill. So there's the apparent contradiction. He does nothing, but he's engaged in doing things. So it's confusing for the intelligence of even a learned sage, what to speak of those of us that, you know, are just hanging out in America somewhere, you know, trying to learn Krishna consciousness. It can be bewildering. We don't have proper guidance. Then, listen to this sentence, new paragraph. There is no difference between the personality of Godhead and the impersonal Brahman. Well, here's the qualifier. How then can the Lord have so many things to do? Whereas the impersonal Brahman is stated to have nothing to do, either materially or spiritually. If the Lord is ever unborn, then how is he born? As the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. He is fearful even to Kala, the supreme fear, and yet the Lord is afraid of fighting Jarasandha and take shelter in a fort? How can one who is full in himself take pleasure in the association of many women? How can he take wives and, just like a householder, take pleasure in the association of family members, children, relatives, and parents? All these apparently contradictory happenings bewilder even the greatest learned scholars, like Maitreya over here, who, thus bewildered, cannot understand whether inactivity is a fact or whether his activities are only imitations. This is very nice. You know, Bhagavatam is a graduate study of the messages of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna speaks of, in the fourth chapter, doing so many things, creating Chaturvarnamaya, Shrishtam, Guna, Karma, Vibhagasha. He creates the four orders and social divisions and so many things. And then he states, but actually I'm doing nothing at all. All this is being carried out by my energy. He's doing nothing at all. He's the permitter. He's one of the five, from chapter 18, Bhagavad Gita, one of the five necessary elements of any activity. But he's the permitter. And because he's omnipotent, his potencies carry out everything. And he directly does nothing at all, particularly with matters of material creation and the sub-creation within the material creation and all the details of creation of this material world. He's doing nothing at all. But he has his spiritual potencies. Now, from the impersonal Brahman, the impersonalists have a fundamental premise. And the fundamental premise is everything is one. So as soon as you have energies, you have two, at least. You have energetic and you have energy. So if your premise is everything is one, then you can't have energies. Therefore, just as Prabhupada stating in the purport, for the impersonalist, the conception is Brahman has neither material nor spiritual activity. The Vaishnava is saying Krishna doesn't have material activity, but he has spiritual activity. And those things that happen in the material world, they're carried out by his external potencies, and when he's lifting Govardhan Hill, they're being carried out by his internal potency. we have a disagreement here between the personalists and the impersonalists. And it centers around whether Krishna has potencies or not. Well, one argument is, if God is complete, how can the Supreme be complete minus something? Well, the Absolute is complete minus potencies. That's not complete. Complete is with potencies. Jiva Goswami says in his Sandarbhas, very important point, very simple point, without accepting that God has, or the Absolute, has inconceivable potencies, there's no question of understanding God or the Absolute. Because if you circumscribe by definition, God is minus this, or the Absolute is minus this, and you can't even consider the Absolute unless it's minus this, you know, you're cheating. Fundamentally. And it's not even reasonable. The Absolute has to be everything. And the Absolute has to be with potencies and without potencies. The Brahman, as the first sentence there says, a feature of the Supreme that's Brahman. There's no exhibition of potencies. And there is Bhagavan, the full exhibition of potencies. And their excellences of those potencies are categorized in six bhagas, or specific opulences. But now go back to the impersonalists and left, say, no, you can't have Bhagavan. And so what is Bhagavan? What's this notion that's there in the Vedas that says Bhagavan? Well, it's covered Brahman. Oh, covered Brahman. What's the covering of Brahman? If there's a covering of Brahman, then it means that there's something greater than Brahman. Watch this one. Well, the covering doesn't exist. It's false. Brahman satya jagat mithya. It's false. It doesn't exist. Let's do that one again. There's this concept in the Vedas that says Bhagavan. And that's a personal concept. You say there's no Bhagavan because that means he has potencies and you can't have two. You have to have one only because that's the premise. There's only one. And so what is Bhagavan? It's Brahman covered. Okay. Brahman, which exists, is covered. So that means the covering exists and the covering is greater than Brahman by your concept. No. The covering doesn't exist. It's false. It's like, you know, circular. It's if you ever have an opportunity, if you're blessed with the opportunity of having a dialogue with an impersonalist, ask them that question. What is the feature of the personality Krishna or Bhagavan? And they'll go into this what's Brahman covered thing. Then ask them, if Brahman is covered, well, just this is the third time, but if Brahman is covered, that means the covering is greater than Brahman. There is something superior to that which is the absolute truth. So how's that? And the answer is, no, it's false. It doesn't exist. It appears to exist, and that's illusion. But when illusion is dispelled, all there is Brahman. Okay. Then there's that state where illusion is covering the absolute truth. No, there's no covering of the absolute truth. It only appears to be so. my dear sir, your bucket has holes in it. It doesn't hold water. It's leaking, my dear sir. But for those, even those who are vastly learned, these kinds of contradictions appear bewildering. But for the devotee, just to repeat, devotees are simply satisfied in hearing and chanting about the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. The solution is, this is the last paragraph of text 16, purport. The solution is that the Lord has nothing to do with anything mundane. All his activities are transcendental. This cannot be understood by the mundane speculators. For the mundane speculators, there is certainly a kind of bewilderment. But for the transcendental devotees, there is nothing astonishing to this. The Brahman conception of the absolute truth is certainly the negation of all mundane activities. The Brahman conception is derived by the process of neti neti, na iti. Not this, not this. Not. Is this Brahman? Is this Brahman? It's not this, it's not this, it's not this. So what's Brahman? It's not this. Well, what is it? Well, that's what it is. It's not this. Yeah, but what is it? It's one. It's oneness. Where there's no diversity, because this and this and this are diversity, and all there is Brahman. So Brahman is that state of oneness, where there's no diversity. Definition by negation. The Brahman conception of the absolute truth is certainly the negation of all mundane activities, but the para-Brahman conception is full with transcendental activities. One who knows the distinctions between the conception of Brahman and the conception of the Supreme Brahman is certainly the real transcendentalist. There is no bewilderment for such transcendentalists. The Lord himself also declares in Bhagavad Gita 10.2, same as what Uddhava is saying, Krishna says, even the great sages and demigods can hardly know anything about my activities and transcendental potencies. The right explanation of the Lord's activities is given by Grandfather Bhishma Dev 1.9.16 in the Bhagavatam as follows. Nahi asya karhichit rajan puman veda viditsitum yad vijnanasyasya yukta muyanti kavayo pihi. Muyanti kavayo pihi. They become, even the kavis become bewildered by my activities. They're not easily understood, but my devotees can understand. The reason devotees can understand is Krishna discloses, I'm like this. And if Krishna doesn't disclose I'm like this, then you don't know. I think I'm not going to go ahead to the Chatur Sloki verses are what's it's referred to before this. Coming up is Uddhava is going to ask Krishna, as you explained those verses, those nutshell verses of the Bhagavatam to Brahma, can you explain them to me also? And those nutshell verses also have these contradictions. Like the first one of the Chaturshloki verses of the Bhagavatam. It's very deep. It's like anyway. it's bewildering. The first one says, Brahma says, or Lord Vishnu says to Brahma, before the creation, I alone exist. During the period of cosmic manifestation, I alone exist. And after annihilation, I alone exist. Now, if I was an impersonalist, I'd be romper room. Because that's it. Brahman is all that exists, and the other thing is false. Proof. Even Lord Vishnu says, I'm right. But it's not that. It's the energies of the Supreme Lord are inseparable from him. So whether his energies are unmanifest or manifest, everything is but the Lord and his energies, and the energies are inseparable from him. So this whole, all of the different philosophies, you know, Vishishta Dvaita and Dvaita Dvaita and Vishuddha Dvaita and all of those, their differentiation has to do with what's going on with these energies. How are we to understand the relationship of God's energies with him? You know, the impersonalists, just, they just snap their fingers and say they don't exist. The Vaishnavas say they exist, and what's the relationship of, it's sambandh again, what's the relationship of God and his energies? Some say they're absolutely the same as him. Some say they're inseparable Vishishtas or attributes of him. Some say they're distinctly separate from him. They exist at the Dvaita Vad of Madhvacharya. But the issue is, what's the relationship? And of his energies with him. Krishna's saying it in Bhagavad Gita, Uddhava's saying it here. It's bewildering to a scholarly person, because that's not how it's going to be understood, because it's understanding the Lord who can only be understood by devotion. Here's a little bit more embellishment of this by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. These contradictions. You take birth, though you have no birth. Though you are the form of time itself, you flee out of fear of the enemies like Jarasandha and take shelter in a fort in the sea. Though you enjoy in yourself with thousands of women you are engaged in household life, with performance of rites for devas and pitris, you are attracted to these things, though you enjoy in yourself. By enjoying with Rukmini and others, you do not destroy your status as self-enjoying, because they are all expansions of yourself. That I know. Therefore, I have used the word ashrama. That part is contradictory. The intelligence of wise people is perplexed by such contradiction. It cannot be said that non-action, no birth, being the form of time, and being self-enjoyer are the true aspects. And the others are imitations only. So like, it's reverse, the language is reverse logic of the neti-neti process. The reverse logic is, it would be contradictory to say that the only thing that exists is not this, not this, not this. No actions, no time, no birth, no activities. And that your birth, your fear, your accepting household life, these are imitations or illusions only. That would be contradictory. Otherwise, it would not be said that the intelligence of the wise become perplexed. The wise would know that these are imitations and not actual, and thus would not be perplexed. Got it? So the wise would say, oh, everything is one, and all that stuff is illusion, and so I'm not perplexed. But they're perplexed because they're not illusion. The Lord is manifesting his pastime. So how do we do this? By again, you can't. You'll get bewildered. So I have this, some of you have noticed, I have this phrase when people ask these really complicated questions. My comment is, that's a college question. That's what I mean by that. It's, you know, trying to figure it out. Using my intellect, there's this, and then there's this, and but this is contradicting that, or that's contradicting this, and so trying to understand the Supreme by intellectual prowess, one will not discern. Krishna will slip right through your fingers. You will not be able to capture Krishna that way. It could be said that when the Lord is described as having no activity, material actions are excluded, but not spiritual actions. Then with that knowledge, why should the wise be perplexed? Wise know, with knowledge, that Brahman is without action and Bhagavan is without knowledge, material knowledge. Where would be the perplexity? Anyway, he's having fun. Dismissing the, you know, and it's with strong logic, dismissing the argumentative logicians that can't understand Krishna. Ta-da! Another contradiction for Uddhava in particular is Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Krishna in Dwaraka is asking Uddhava for advice. That's contradictory, and for a intellectual reasoned approach only, that's like very bewildering. But it's affection. Krishna is the source of the intelligence of Uddhava, and then he asks Uddhava some questions. He's giving Uddhava some service, and he's reciprocating with him very intimately. And it's for that reason that Uddhava just wants, his breaking down with sobbing and, you know, just being carried away, is it's an expression of his ecstatic love. I don't care for the liberations and sense gratifications and economic betterment. I don't care for those things. I just want your service. I want your association. Okay, so I will continue. Text 17, he says, O my Lord, your eternal self is never divided by the influence of time, and there is no limitation to your perfect knowledge. Thus, you were sufficiently able to consult with yourself, yet you called upon me for consultation, as if bewildered, although you are never bewildered. And this act of yours bewilders me. My Lord, kindly explain to us, now it's plural, He's aware that Maitreya is there as he's exchanging with the Lord. Kindly explain to us, if you think us competent to receive it, that transcendental knowledge which gives enlightenment about yourself and which you explained before to Brahmaji. So he's asking for a rerun or, you know, a very personal viewing, audition of the Chaturasloki verses of Bhagavatam. He's asking, you know, please explain Srimad Bhagavatam to me, or the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam as you did with Brahmaji, if you think us competent. That's a nice way of saying, you know, whatever we're lacking, please provide it. Yoga kshema vahamyaham. If we're deficient in our capacity to understand, then please empower us to understand. And please offer this explanation. Uddhava is so expert. He's so many things. He's so learned. He's so devoted. He's, you know, socially so nuanced that he knows just what to say and how to say it. He's so qualified. So the question that began this whole canto, that is, the sages of Naimisharanya hearing from Suta Goswami that there was this discussion between Vidura and Maitreya, and they wanted to hear the details. That was a good question. And the qualified speaker, Suta, who heard from Shukadev Goswami, is disclosing this very elevated, very refined exposition of about Krishna. One last little thing. When one explains, Krishna is being asked to explain the Chaturasloki verses. It's going to be not like, you know, tape recording, or a, you know, necessarily a verbatim repetition. But it's going to be a presentation where the essence is disclosed according to time and circumstance, and the inspiration of the Supreme Lord. Same with us. when we're called upon to present the message of disciplic succession, it's not a tape recording or a verbatim recitation necessarily. It may be, but at least reciting of the shlokas, but the disclosures of the embedded messages will be time and circumstance. So what Krishna is going to express to Uddhava is the same, although the packaging is different than as he expressed to Lord Brahma. They're different persons, the different circumstances different, their capacities are different. And by receiving, for our purposes, by receiving this version, that rendering, you know, that explaining to Brahma, explaining to Uddhava, we're getting to see the same thing from different perspectives. The thing doesn't change. The perspective is diverse. And it's not only natural, it's very nice. It's Krishna who is disclosing himself, just as it was Krishna who was imparting through Uddhava the messages for Krishna, whether he should respond to the call for dealing with Jarasandha, or whether he should respond to the request of Yudhisthira to preside over the Rajasuya sacrifice. There were two different requests being made at the same time while he was in Dwarka. So he turned to Uddhava. Uddhava, what should I do? The essence of Krishna consciousness is a loving relationship with Krishna. And the diversity of that loving relationship with Krishna manifests itself in our loving relationships with devotees of Krishna. It's an expression of our love for Krishna. And those loving relationships are all diverse. But the essence is our loving relationship with Krishna, because that devotee is representing Krishna. They're intimately connected to Krishna through their devotion. So it's all part of our loving relationship with Krishna. And sharing with one another the messages of Krishna Katha, like this, discussing the topics of Bhagavatam together. It's part of our loving relationship with Krishna. We're hearing about Krishna from those that know Krishna very well and very expertly disclosing Krishna. So we're just, you know, taking those same topics and churning them a little bit. It's stirring our attraction and our appreciation for Krishna. Okay, any comments or questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. With this description, I got a little confused with like this concept of respect. Like it seems like Vidura was very pure in his intention to hear about Krishna. And according to the description, it seems like Uddhava was more intimate and qualified to speak about Krishna as compared to Maitreya. So, I mean, I was just considering that respect can be shown, but when it comes to hearing intimate things or taking siksha, was Vidura in a compromised situation because of presence of Maitreya? Like, was it he would have gained more if he would have heard directly from Uddhava?
He got a chance to hear from both of them. In one sense, yes. In one sense, yes, because Uddhava is more elevated. But in another sense, because Maitreya had heard directly from Krishna, and not just heard, he had assimilated. Vidura received, the outcome is Vidura became Manuttama Adhikari Vaishnav. And in so doing, Uddhava was preserving etiquette. So, nothing lost and nothing compromised at the same time. In fact, he did. I mean, all of what we're hearing, Vidura heard. All these nice descriptions, little descriptions of Krishna's pastimes, you know, the previous verses. So many nice. Now, go hear some more from Maitreya. So he didn't dismiss him. He spoke. And then when it came to further questions, it was go to Maitreya. So that's perfectly fine. Yes, Nandasuno. I mentioned what?
You mentioned that Maitreya was a mixed devotee.
Yeah.
So, I didn't get what you meant by it. A mixed devotee.
Okay. You know the verse from bhakti rasamrita sindhu anyabhi lasha tushanyam jnana karma dinavratam. You know that verse? The teaching of Lord Chaitanya is that devotional service should be freed from two things: desire for sense gratification and the desire for mental speculation, or fruitive work and mental speculation. Jnana, we did this one yesterday, knowledge, speculative knowledge in particular, and karma, fruitive work. So there's a way of trying to understand what's what by figuring it out, by being smart and figuring it out. Like, who's God, or what's God, or what's supreme, and just figuring it out. You know, being a philosopher. You know, common is Western philosophers. But, you know, India has its share of philosophers in the course of history. Philosophical speculation. Perhaps maybe it's like this. So that's jnana. And karma is by fruitive work, trying to reach the supreme or some sense of the supreme by detached work. But without devotion, the process of knowledge and or the process of prescribed work is not going to allow you to understand Krishna. So Maitreya, or one who is a mixed devotee, they're devotees. They accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they try to engage in his service. But to understand further about Krishna, there's this tendency mixed with their devotion to try to figure things out. Pull on their chin, scratch their head, and try to figure it out. As opposed to simply hearing and chanting about Krishna, becoming purified by that process and awakening a strong desire simply to serve and please Krishna, and Krishna disclosing himself. That's unmixed. Jnane prayasam udapashya namanta eva. This is when Lord Chaitanya was having his discussion with Ramananda Roy. You're familiar with that, right? Lord Chaitanya was in Puri and he wanted to go on a tour of South India. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, when you travel, please go meet Ramananda Roy. He's the governor of Madras. And he's a most elevated, I don't know anyone in this world except you, who is so elevated in the science of devotion. Please meet him. You'll be very happy to spend time. So when they met, Lord Chaitanya asked Ramananda Roy, what's the goal of life? This is where their conversation started. What's the goal of life? And what's the means to achieve it? So Lord Chaitanya heard different ideas and he rejected them, but finally accepted this one. It's a verse spoken by Lord Brahma in the 14th chapter of Bhagavatam, 10th canto, where Lord Brahma says, Jnane, knowledge, prayasam. Prayasa means endeavor. Through endeavoring by speculative knowledge to understand the Supreme, one rejects that tendency. That's a pure devotion, is I want to know Krishna, but I don't want to know Krishna by endeavors through speculative knowledge. Because I'll never understand Krishna that way. And even if I come up with something I think is an understanding of Krishna, it's not an understanding of Krishna. It's a mental, you know, fabrication. But that's, so that's what mixed. That tendency mixed. So what is, if we don't do that, then how are we going to understand? How are we going to understand is Krishna discloses himself. I'm like this. And we just accept Krishna as he is. As he discloses himself. It doesn't require that you're, you know, you can get A's in all your exams. You have a, you know, a sharp brain. It requires devotion. The common example that Prabhupada would refer to is the gopis. They weren't highly educated. They were simple village girls. But because of love for Krishna, Krishna disclosed, I am like this. So, it doesn't mean, therefore don't go to school. Yay, don't go to school. Look at what Maharaj said, don't go to school. Doesn't mean don't go to school. It means that that strength that one gains by academic efforts is not the launching pad for understanding Krishna. Though that faculty of discrimination, it needs to be developed for practical life in this world. But it's not the means of understanding Krishna. We can use that in Krishna's service very nicely. But it's not, without it I can't know Krishna, and with it I'm definitely going to know Krishna because I'm really smart. There are lots of smart people that don't have a clue about Krishna. Because they're lacking in devotion. And so they reach so many other twisted, distorted conclusions about life and about God and about things. So now, if one is a devotee and has such a tendency, it's a conflict. Unless that's used under proper direction, intellectual ability or discerning ability is used with proper direction in devotion, then it's useful. Otherwise, it covers, like with Maitreya. But through the association of Uddhava and Krishna, it went away. He accepted, oh, this is the message, I should simply desire Krishna's association. Okay? Anything?
Hare Krishna. One of the principles that we always heard from you is that relationship is important. Relationship is important. Suppose one devotee is taking guidance from someone, so you always encourage that relationship more than anything. So my question comes in that regard is, isn't the right thing more important than the relationship? I feel...
What if a relationship is the right thing? Why, it's a false dilemma.
So if I'm getting a choice between, or if someone is going through that choice between, I've seen you always say that what is being told in that relationship, that will always be the right. If you are having.
Here's the neutralizing factor to the false dilemma. Krishna. If in your premise there's some discrepancy between something in the relationship and the right thing, Krishna will adjust that. If Krishna will adjust it. He says right in Bhagavad Gita, Kshipram Bhavati Dharmatma. Krishna's, because the essence is our relationship with Krishna. Without the relationship with Krishna, how are we going to contact that which is right? Now let's go further downstream and say, okay, now there are relationships of those who are in relationship with Krishna. And supposing there's some discrepancy in something, some piece of that entity, that person, what they say or do or something or whatever, Krishna will correct that. If one has faith in Krishna especially. So it say the same thing in a different way. What's our objective? What's our goal? Our goal is to please Krishna. And what's pleasing to Krishna? You got an answer to that question. You got an answer to your earlier question. Krishna wants living entities to come back to him in a loving mood. And the way to come back to him in a loving mood is through loving relationships with those who have loving relationships with him. Otherwise we don't have access. Even we may know what's right. Because that's what's right. And Krishna will adjust everything if something needs adjusting. Because that's the principle. Again, it's a false dilemma. But just supposing there is such a thing, Krishna will adjust it. It's like, you know, here's the very first lila that's discussed in the Bhagavatam is Ashwatthama killing the five sons of the Pandavas and then fleeing for his life. And Arjuna pursuing him, the Brahmastra, Krishna protects Arjuna, Krishna captures Ashwatthama, he brings him back. So now, what's right? It's a promise made to Draupadi. Draupadi says, don't kill him. I release you from this promise. Don't kill him. Yudhisthira, his elder brother, who Arjuna would never do anything other than what Yudhisthira says, instructs. Yes, spare him. Bhima says, kill him. Krishna says, kill him. And don't worry. You won't be guilty of just killing a brahmana, because this person's not a brahmana. What he's done is heinous. He's not a brahmana. He deserves punishment. Kill him. Now what's right? What's right is what Krishna wants. And Arjuna is so qualified that he knows what Krishna wants. And he knows what Krishna wants because of that relationship with Krishna. That's what's the essence. And so he does, very expertly, what both of them say, although that's apparently contradictory truths. Kill him, don't kill him. So he kills him without killing him. Because for one who is once honored, dishonor is worse than death. He disgraces him and sends him away. Cuts his hair and the jewel and his top knot and get out of town. Don't come back. You know, our lives may not have such intense drama as that, but there are things where, at least to us, it certainly seems contradictory. Now, where do we go with that? Between what we think is right and, you know, our path of action. What are we going to do? What seems like we're being told or advised or encouraged or something. What do we do? We have to fully depend upon Krishna and take shelter of those primary relationships that Krishna has provided for us. And Krishna will adjust. It may not be like, you know, snap our fingers and Krishna adjusts. But that's the principle. You have something? No? Okay.
Maharaj, this is the first time actually I am coming in direct contact with a guru from Krishna consciousness, and I am glad I did. I have one basic question. All the whole Krishna consciousness is about devotion to Krishna. Everything else is about getting jnana, to know oneself. The whole purpose of whatever we go through the scriptures is to know oneself. And about jnana, and as I listen to so many people, bhakti and all other yogas must lead to jnana, and that is one. When you get jnana only, you get realization of one, knowing oneself, and that is what all the scriptures are about. So how the devotion will help to know oneself, even if it doesn't lead to jnana? See, as per even Bhagavatam, I started actually reading recently, started reading Bhagavatam, and everything, even in the Bhagavatam, there are about instances about jnana, but it is through devotion to Krishna, that's it. But just by doing devotion to Krishna and service to people, can one know about oneself, which is the final thing which we have to know?
Okay. There's several ways to respond. Knowing oneself independent from and separate from knowing the Supreme and one's relationship with the Supreme is incomplete. Knowing an object distinct from and separate from its source is incomplete knowledge of the object. Just like, you know, I could come to know you. But you're not independent. You have relationships with other people. You is, you know, to a full picture of you is you in your relationships with everybody. But yet, and that's part of who you are. So, that's a material example, but the spiritual principle is the living entity is a spark of the Supreme. Mam evang sajiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. So that's knowledge, but to know the individual, to know the self, independent from and separate from knowledge of the Supreme is incomplete. Conversely, knowledge of the Supreme immediately brings knowledge of the self because the self is part of the Supreme. So how do I know the Supreme? By process of knowledge alone is insufficient because Krishna says that. And we just read it. 10th chapter, verse 2. Even the greatest sages and learned scholars and they don't know me. Then he explains it further. It's not possible. Listen carefully. He says, chapter 10, Bhagavad Gita, anything that comes into being, now what is it that doesn't come into being? Anything that comes into being, that is born, cannot possibly know its source of emanation. Because before you existed, what do you know? And that, but what's your source of emanation? You can't, by gyan, by speculative knowledge, discern it. You can take a guess, perhaps maybe it was this, but you don't know. So real knowledge is when there's disclosure by that absolute truth from which you've come and everything else has come. When there is that disclosure, Krishna says in the 10th chapter, text number 8, when you understand that He is that source, you engage in His devotional service fully. Now your statement is the other way around. But that's not what Krishna says. And I like what Krishna says. Now how do we get to that knowledge that Krishna is the source? It sounds like that's, by Gyan leads to bhakti. Sounds like it. But even that knowledge, one can read that verse and not get it. You know, it turns into a speculative game where this means that, and that means something else, and then you put the whole package together and you figured it out by speculative knowledge. But you take the direct meaning, and it's not speculative knowledge, it's disclosure. And one will accept that disclosure only if I've accepted Krishna as the personality of Godhead. I'm serving Him. And that, he says that elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita. Bhaktyamam abhijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvata. Only by devotion can I be understood. He says the same thing at the end of the 12th chapter. Nobody understands. He said to Arjuna, excuse me, the end of the 11th chapter. Nobody understands me. He's shown his universal form. Arjuna goes, oh, this is overwhelming. Please remove and show your original form. So he withdraws the universal form, shows the forearm form, and then shows his two-arm form. He says, nobody knows me in my original form like this, except my devotee. So in the 12th chapter, Arjuna asks, you know, which is considered better? Worshipping your personal feature. And how do we engage in your devotional service properly? So that we can know you. And now, with knowing the whole, one can understand the part. Not only me, but the parts, plural. Minus that devotion to the Supreme, self-realization is incomplete. And that's, you know, being gentle. Because this part is not separate from the whole. You have the whole, you have understanding of the part as well. Self-realization and God-realization occur simultaneously. Self-realization minus God-realization is incomplete. And that's being gentle. So how do we get God realization? Several indications I've given is, according to Bhagavad Gita, which is a book of knowledge, it's by devotion only. Otherwise, the absolute truth is not something that we can discern. However much we may be striving for self-realization through Gyan, it will remain limited or imperfect. It's by disclosure. And that disclosure comes when one has devotion. And even if one is disclosed and one doesn't have devotion, one isn't going to receive it. I'll use my flashlight to try to find the sun. That's not how the sun is. The sun shows itself. You don't need a flashlight. If you're looking for the sun with a flashlight, you're looking, the methodology is wrong. You're in the dark place looking for the sun. Just go into the sunlight. You can see the sun. speculative power does not disclose the absolute truth. The absolute truth discloses itself or himself. And that's done unto his devotee. Therefore, Krishna says to Arjuna, Bhaktosi me sakha cheti. You can understand this, Arjuna, because you're my devotee and my friend. Both. My dearmost friend. And others who may be very scholarly, very accomplished in Gyan, they won't be able to understand it. It's implied. And it's true. Another place is the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, you know, he gives stages. And cultivation of knowledge is way down here. Better than that is renunciation of fruitive work. And then better than that is the regulations of bhakti. And then the mind completely fixed upon me, and engage your intelligence always in me. You'll live in me always without a doubt. So cultivation of knowledge is not here, it's here. These aren't my ideas. This is Krishna. And the same is being played out here, where there's two personalities seated before Krishna. One is Uddhava, the other is Maitreya. Maitreya is vastly scholarly. He's a Muni, Maitreya Muni. And Parashara Muni is his spiritual master. Vyasadeva is his friend. No, he's, you know, he has high circles that he moves in. And he's very elderly. And there's Uddhava, who's by age younger, but he's this intimate devotee. And Krishna's showing himself. Just before he's leaving earth, like the setting of the sun at the end of the day. And he discloses all these intimate things to him, and for the same reason, because he's such an intimate devotee. And he says it. You are very fortunate that you come to me at this time. Therefore, I'm going to disclose many wonderful things to you and give you this promise that after this life, you'll not take birth again and you'll attained Vaikuntha. It's not because he was a Gyani, because he was this intimate devotee of Krishna. He had vast knowledge, but he was an intimate pure devotee of Krishna. That was the qualification. Something else? Yes?
Maharaj, like, my question is regarding bewilderment. Like, when I sometimes, like, go through, like, some pastimes or something, like, they become, like, inconceivable to me and, like believable, and, like, I then develop, like, a habit, like, this is not for me, or indifference.
What was the last part?
Like,
this is not for me?
Yeah, like, you know, like, I can't understand it, and, like, getting bewildered and developing, like, indifference towards those things.
Okay.
So, like, how to, like, you know, like, that.
Well, this discussion that we've been having just now should help you. It's at our stage of spiritual development, there. It's kind of obvious, but there are things that are beyond our capacity to understand. Moreover, because of our conditioning, the tendency, as discussed earlier, is by speculation to try to understand, but that doesn't permit understanding. They're not meant to be understood, Krishna's pastimes or his form or his qualities. They're not to be understood by speculation. So let go of that tendency, one. Two, be patient with your maturing in spiritual life, so that things that now are not clear, in course of time, they become clear, just by spiritual maturity, by evolving spiritually. There's this interesting example of Vedic marriage, where it's not prevalent today, but in Vedic times, a young boy and a young girl were married. Very young. And the system was, the parents would do the horoscope and they would decide, and you know, the boy and girl would be married. The boy would continue staying with his parents, the girl would continue staying with her parents. But on their birthday, the girl would bring something very nice for the boy. And, you know, something nice to eat or something like that. And he'd think, oh, this is very nice. She's very nice. She brought me something nice to eat. And this would go on over a period of time. You know, before they even had any sense of, you know, man, woman, adult kinds of attraction and relationship. It's just, you know, it's just like a little seedling, and sprouting little seedling, and starts to grow. Then, but all the while they understand, this is my wife, this is my husband. And the relationship is she's over there and I'm over here, or the other way around. So when they reach the stage where there is male-female attraction, they're already having some affection and some appreciation for one another. Although at the earlier stage, they didn't have a clue what that meant. But through maturing, biological maturing, that stage comes. And then they know what male-female attraction is. But they know who their husband and who their wife is. And there's some affection. So, even aside from Krishna's pastimes, just, say, chanting the holy name. We may not have taste for the chanting of the holy name. But we hear, this is for this age of Kali, according to scripture. It's the means of achieving spiritual perfection. But we don't have any taste for it, because we're not spiritually mature yet. So we chant, because we understand, under authority, it's good for us. We're trusting in the persons who are advising this way, and we're trusting in the scripture, and we're engaging in chanting. And gradually, some purification takes place and some attraction for chanting will start. We don't understand the length and the breadth of the glories of the chanting of the holy name. That's okay. We continue to hear about the holy name and continue to chant the holy name. And gradually. And same with Krishna's pastimes. Fundamentally, what's important is there's a difference between material and spiritual. That, you know, that's Sankhya. There's a difference between the soul and there's a difference between the body. That's Sankhya. There's a difference between later in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's form and Arjuna's form. Arjuna forgets, Krishna doesn't forget, because his form is spiritual. Oh, so what's that? Spiritual form. I don't have any experience of spiritual form. We have experience of material form. So when we think of form, we think of material form. What's a spiritual form? You don't have any experience of it. But gradually, by awakening of God consciousness, or dormant God consciousness, a sense of what spiritual form becomes possible, because our material conceptions become cleansed and spiritualized. We can start thinking like that, although we don't have any immediate experience of it yet. And so forth. It's just, you know, spiritual maturing in course of gradually evolving in our spiritual consciousness. So in the beginning, there has to be adau shraddha, some preliminary faith. And through hearing of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, that it's like watering the little bhakti lata, and it starts to grow. And as it grows and matures, then things that we couldn't understand before become understood. Even like, you know, we're not this body. Okay, I can agree with that, but what is it like to live in that consciousness all the time? That's not within my experience presently. So what do? I can get bewildered, you know. When I pinch, it hurts. You know, it seems to me like I'm my body. It takes some thoughtfulness, it takes some purification to truly understand, and then to live in that consciousness takes further advancement. Is that all right? And same with Krishna's pastimes. You have something?
Guru Maharaj, when I was having so many questions and then I was so confused.
Speak clearly.
Yes, Maharaj. There's some question which comes in my mind. I tend to think that I know what my spiritual master has said about this, or this is what I have read about this in scriptures. So then I don't ask that question. So two parts of the question. One is that should I still confirm or ask the question? And the second part is that can that be speculation?
The question sounds like speculation. And the first part is if you've heard or you've read, that's sufficient. You have to hear it again. You can hear it again, but it's not like you have to hear it again. Generally speaking, truths, we get plenty of opportunity to hear it again and again and again and again. The problem is not whether we've heard it and how many times we've heard it. The problem is our receptivity. Or conversely, you know, how much our other faculties are ramped up. Our sense enjoyment and mental speculation faculties are ramped up. And if that's really ramped up, we're not going to hear it. But the problem is not, do I need to hear it again? Reconfirm it. And going into that space, to me, sounds like riding on the chariot of the mind. So the answer to the second one is yes. Right? Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. The Prabhupada Ki Jai.